You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware.
IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This is Greg Miller.
Hey, that's right. I've only been with you for like 260 episodes.
This is Justin Justified Davis.
Oh, all right. Okay.
And this is Brian Altano.
Nothing in the middle.
No, no. Brian, nothing in the middle, Altano.
That would be something, I think.
If you're just tuning in, GameScoop is, of course, IGN's video game talk show, where we just talk about, you know, what's going on in the video game world.
You shoot the breeze.
We just rap with each other.
Yeah.
Friends sitting around.
Hanging out. Fireside chats.
We air Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, and this Friday you'll have a chance to win another $250 Best Buy gift card. Stay tuned for that. It's that time of year again when we're all sort of thinking about game of the year. We're all sort of, we're trying to play as many games as we can, trying to knock them out, because we're sort of trying to finalize our list of nominees right now. We're not ready to vote yet. We're just trying to get a list of nominees together. So, you know, we've been having meetings, everyone's playing stuff.
A lot of fighting.
I love this time of year because it's the whole year, games are coming out. We're all playing them sort of sporadically and independently. And this is the one time where I can come in on a Monday and be like, holy shit, did you guys play this over the weekend? And 10 other people jump up and they're like, yes, and it sucked. Or like, yes, and I loved it until this or that. Or it had pacing issues and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Which is great. I that's my favorite thing about finishing video games is coming in and having
Like that's people will get on you all the time about like, we feel like we have to play everything as it comes out because we want to be part of that discussion. And this is the one time a year where it comes back around. Where it was like, we had the meeting on Friday, right? The first of our many meetings about all this nomination stuff. And to sit there for an hour and a half and just talk to each other about games was really cool because we don't get that chance often to talk about different things that Justin's played on his mobile platform that I haven't played yet because I've been doing PS3 stuff.
Mm-hmm. Doing real games.
Yeah, you know, not playing baby games, not playing things for children.
Do any of you feel ready to cast your vote yet?
No.
I don't.
I feel like I have a good idea of where my votes are all jumbled.
I
do not have a final game of the year vote.
I have one that I'm sort of hovering around right now.
So do we feel comfortable revealing that right now?
No.
Like
I don't think we can. What's interesting is that last year...
I don't give a crap. I'm Greg Miller.
So obviously last year, not everybody... It wasn't a unanimous vote for Portal 2. Like, that was IGN's game of the year. You know, some people like Skyrim. Some people, you know, you obviously loved Uncharted.
Yeah.
But, like, there was no one... you know, even if people didn't vote for Portal 2, they're like, man, that was a great game. Like, that was, it was an easy choice compared to how maybe it could be. There wasn't a ton of back and forth. This year, it seems much more wide open.
Yeah, I agree to that. There's a lot more candidates, I think, up in the running right now that could easily be it, where you're like, oh, man, all right.
And that's kind of cool. Like, the general consensus is that this year was probably not as strong of a year for video games as last year. But that allows stuff to slip in there. Like, it allows... You know, I don't even know, like, we're talking a lot about Hotline Miami, we're talking a lot about FTL, we're talking a lot about games like Unfinished Swan and Journey, and these games that, you know, in a bigger year would probably not be in the running. It's like, man, that game was really good. So we're seeing a lot more stuff sort of slip up there, and the conversation's a lot bigger, I think.
Yeah, so like I was saying, IGN has not finalized its nominee list.
Yeah, I mean, none of those games are, these are just, you know, lots and anything that was great is in the
DC
discussion.
DC Universe Online, pulling for that, update number 20 was pretty good.
But you bring up a good point. Games we're considering include Borderlands 2, Dishonored, Mass Effect 3, Halo 4, and then next to all of those games is Journey, Unfinished Swan, Walking Dead.
Mark of the Ninja.
Yeah. These, like, you know, smaller.
Yep. Yeah, and I've been playing a lot of these games, and I'm finding myself leaning towards them more than the big, like, Assassin's Creed and the Borderlands and stuff like that. I haven't gotten to Halo yet, of course, but I actually really love this, like, this sort of format that I sat down, I played Sound Shapes from start to finish in 2 hours. I played Unfinished Swan from start to finish in 2 hours. I played Journey from start to finish in 2 hours. And people were asking me to compare them, and it's like, that's the worst part about our jobs, I think, is when people are like, you know, what do you, like, I don't know if people ask Roger Ebert if he likes some art house film versus another art house film, and they just kind of lump them all together. Like, to me, Journey and Unfinished Swan, they're nothing alike aside from...
Yeah, that's been a pet peeve of mine, too, is they get lumped in this category of art games, and it's like, they're not the same genre, they don't play the same, like, they're not trying to do the same things, they don't
like, one of them is a first-person paintball game, sort of, for a while, and then it's like a vine-growing simulator.
Well, it's like puzzles and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And so I don't know how, like, they get lumped in this category of, like, you know, made by, you know, small teams or, you know, indie games. Yeah. And I'm like, they're not the same. Like, you wouldn't compare, like, which should I get, Call of Duty or should I get Assassin's Creed? Like, you know, that, you know, those are seen as separate things. So why do art house games get lumped together?
It happens all the time, too. Yeah. It's kind of a pet peeve. But, I mean, I think people just like to be able to kind of compartmentalize things in their heads. And if you go, well, I have $10 to spend on PSN, then, you know, fucking mow a lawn or something. Get $20. Buy them both.
Yeah, that's fair.
Go out and mow the lawn.
Mow
in
the
November.
Lawn.
Is that what's happening?
Sell some drugs. I don't know how kids make
money. It's snowing. Please go away.
Mow some snow. Get out there.
It's like 80 degrees in San Francisco today.
Yeah, it's nice. It is.
What do we think about Borderlands 2?
I think it's on my short list. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of... I think it would be the game I've had the most fun with. Like, I mean, like, when it came out this year and, like, my roommate moved his TV into the living room and we sat there with dual TVs playing on the same game for, like, 5 hours in a row.
Yeah,
that was
really cool.
Awesome. That was awesome. And not everybody has that experience. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that. So maybe it's different for every people. But the way the co-op works and dropping in and dropping out and working with people and leveling up and doing all this. And then the fact that the story is so funny and Handsome Jack is such a great character. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's so many awesome parts to Borderlands that I want to go back and do all the DLC. You know, I bought the season pass. I'm all set to do more stuff.
I really enjoy it. The art direction's awesome. It's probably the best looking game this year, just simply from a technical level. I just think, like, the whole hook of get a good gun to kill an enemy better, to get a better gun to kill an enemy better. Mm-hmm. It's a great like loop, and I can see why that would hook people. But for
Andrew
me,
Goldfarb.
Yeah, like, you know, our news editor Andrew Goldfarb sunk 100 hours into that game. Like, not even joking, 100 hours.
He's all maxed out, right?
Yeah. And, like, you know, the second the DLC drops, he's on it and he's flying through it. But for me, like, I mean, I see it, I get it, but it's not the type of cycle that can really grab me when I can go and play something else and from start to finish in a few hours.
Something that can show you something different every single... Yeah. Like, I haven't played Borderlands 2 yet. It's one of the games that's on my list. Hopefully I'll get to it in the next week or two. But it strikes me as a game that, yeah, I mean, maybe the criticism could be leveled at it that it's too repetitive. And that's coming from someone that hasn't jumped into it yet. You know, compared to another game that's really, like, showing you a bunch of different things or a bunch of smaller experiences that are, you know, showing you things you haven't seen before.
I will say one interesting Game of the Year experience I had this year. I was texting Greg about this. But I tried to play a PC game.
And, which one?
Hotline Miami, which I looked incredibly exciting. The title screen came up, and I plugged in my Xbox 360 controller, which I had calibrated before to use on PC games through Steam, and it was like, nope. And I went into the forums to read about it, and it was like, create a notebook file that's blank, call it Xbox 2, and drop it in your Steam apps .slash folder, and I did it, and nothing happened, and I was like, it's so nice outside. It's just so beautiful outside. And I was like, because this is after a full weekend of just playing console games where you turn them on, and everyone's going to hate me for this.
Oh, but I get it all the time.
I mean, it's just...
It is the problem with PC games.
Like, the game looks like a Super Nintendo game. Why can't I play it with a fucking controller? Like, it's sorted out. I'm not playing it with WSAD or whatever.
They just added controller support.
They did. But I think part of it was to drop this notepad file into the... And, like, I don't have time for that shit.
Exactly.
I just don't.
Games are... Like, this is what I get into I was talking shit on PC games last GameScoop. I do it pretty much every GameScoop.
Yeah.
And somebody tweeted at me. He's like, well, I guess I'll just take my first-person shooters at a crisp frame rate and better graphics.
Right.
I don't care how good the game looks.
Yeah,
I do not... The console games look fine. They look pretty good. I don't need to worry about it looking that much better. And, like, I understand the PCs are more powerful and they can do this, that, and the other.
Hey,
and
if I had, like a Jetsons robot that would set up everything for me,
sure.
Where it was just like... It's like, hey, come on in, George. Your Call of Duty's ready, and the settings are all maxed out, and you didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Here's a controller. Sit down and be like, I fucking love PC games.
Yeah.
This is great. Someone, it's on my PS3. I turn on my PS3, and I play a game. And
someone, well, there's somewhere. A firmware. Like, that's the argument, right? It's like, I understand the anti-arguments of all this
yes.
stuff.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
The anti-arguments.
I'll get to the anti-arguments.
From the makers of arguments, guys.
I was just going to say that someone somewhere is going to watch this Game Scoop, and they're putting on their wolf mask right now and getting in their DeLorean and heading over to the IGN office.
Yep. They're mad. They're really mad at me.
It's one of those things for me.
Hotline Miami is really good. I strongly
gaming is my entertainment and my go-to entertainment. I don't watch that much TV. I want to play games, and I get home late from work because the Muni sucks ass.
Mm-hmm.
I eat dinner and then I have 2 hours maybe. If I have another project, I need to sit down and go. I don't want to sit down in Google Drivers to figure out why the fuck ARM isn't working and why I can't play.
Yeah, I don't just sort it out. Like, treat me like an idiot child that I am.
That's why consoles are great. That's how they treat us.
Exactly. They're like, put the disc in and press start.
Yeah.
Cool. Done.
Done.
Got it.
I mean, the interesting thing about Game of the Year is it does put games like Hotline Miami head-to-head against something like Halo 4 or something like Borderlands. Like, how do you even begin to sort out, it's not objective at all. Like, it's the most subjective thing. Like, it's really tough. And then someone, like, what happens if three people are absolutely in love with something and everybody else is sort of so-so on it? And then it's like, these are things, it's a lengthy process to sort out, what
I had more fun in the 2 hours I spent playing Unfinished Swan than the 15 hours I spent playing Borderlands.
Yeah.
Totally different experiences. But I mean, Unfinished Swan doesn't even have textures.
Yeah,
it doesn't even have textures, and it's up for Game of the Year against this game that's just like completely beautiful cel-shaded world that's just like just incredible to look at. Like, you come onto a scene and all of a sudden you're like, look at those mountains, look at these characters, look at the way everyone's like riding through the hills and everything like that. And I'm like, look at this room, it's empty until I throw paint on the wall.
When you also
game of the year.
It's
crazy.
You have to weigh something like, so Halo 4 is, and I haven't played it yet, but, I read Ryan's his review and watched the video review, and it seems like it's sort of Halo, but, like, they're just edging, like, they're smoothing off all those rough edges, and maybe it's, like, the best Halo ever versus something that does something completely new, something I've never seen before, like something like FTL or Hotline Miami, which... How do you weigh the originality versus building on something that's been, Halo's been around for a long time at this point. So it's tough.
Like, the fact that you can sit down and finish Journey from start to finish in like an hour.
Yep.
And it's just like...
The answer is that we just
experience
it. It's like, so if it only took you an hour to beat it, but then how long does it stick with you after that?
Yeah, right? Exactly. And then what I've noticed a lot too is with games like this, and I definitely notice it with Sound Shapes, is I got through all the main stuff very quickly. I really enjoyed it. And then the game becomes something completely different.
Yeah. Right.
Like, it's like, here's hard mode. And it's like, this is like a completely different game here.
Yeah.
This is suddenly not this fun little bouncy platformer where I'm going to the beat. This is like this psychotic, crazy trophy driven hell world where I have to like collect as much as I can in 13 seconds and die hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Unfinished Swan, where it was like, people were like, oh, did you get that trophy where you don't throw any paintballs or whatever. I think you can only throw three or something.
Yeah, it's like minimalist to get through the Watchtower part.
Yeah, and you're just going through sound, and it's just this totally blank world. Like, that makes the game completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, or going in and collecting everything in Journey instead of just flying through it. So.
The answer is that we get in a room and yell at each other.
Yeah.
Until we crown Game of the Year.
I mean, it's the same way we come up
with
our...
I like how much fighting there's been right now. Not fighting, but how much argument. This is the most... aggressive, let's try to get nominations. We haven't gotten close to voting. We don't know what the final games are nominated are, and there's like all this like debate about how to fill this and how many slots we should have and, you know, what game gets here, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously,
we're doing presentations. People are sending out detailed emails like, I know you'll never play this 70-hour game.
Yeah.
So here's my review. Here's my video review.
Here's my pitch.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a science fair.
Yeah, I love it. I love that part.
It's great.
And we can do whatever we want. I mean, IGN, we can have as many nominations for Game of the Year as we decide we want to have, like whatever makes us happy. But, you know, we know a certain number of games, like, look, we're pretty sure these are going to be on the nomination list. And then there's open slots. But there's more games than there are open slots. And that's, you know, that's the sort of thorny part of the process we're in the middle of right now.
We have a whole new console coming out too that's not even out yet.
Yep.
You know, and there's new games for that we're going to have to.
We're still waiting on Call of Duty. I mean, there's so many big games too that are still not here that we need to factor into all this.
Yeah, and that's actually a fair point. I mean, if anybody's watching this, we've built in time that, you know, we're not going to have things locked down before we get a chance to play Call of Duty, before
there's a brand new side-scrolling Mario Brothers game coming to the office. Yeah. And that is like my favorite series in the world. I love the one that just came out on 3DS, even though we knocked it down a few pegs for not being so original. It's one of my most played games of the year. There's one coming out for Wii. It's their first time ever, or for Wii U, ever doing this in HD. Yep. And this could be like my favorite platforming game of all time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Like, I haven't even played it yet, so.
A game like Mario is, you know, maybe it's more the same and it won't be up for Game of the Year. Maybe it's going to be mind-blowing. And then, it obviously has to be on that list.
Like, or it's like the Halo 4 thing, where it's just like they perfected this thing that they've been working on for years. And this is the best version they've ever done of it.
Shut it down, guys.
Shut it down. That's it. The Mario's not going to make more money for anybody. Just close it off.
We're trying to get ahead of it this year and get our awards out actually before we break for the holidays, which is really nice.
Which means, it is. It's actually pretty cool. Which, I mean, historically, IGN editors have always spent the holiday break playing all the stuff. Like, right before I leave for Christmas, Greg will be like, oh, you missed this on PS3, and I'll go home and I'll play it. You know, I mean, I think it was like 3 years ago I bought a PS3 right before going home for vacation just to have one for those 2 weeks while I was there. And I ended up playing through all these things, and I came back, and I was like, all right, I'm confident, I'm ready to vote. This year, all bets are off.
You can do that over Thanksgiving break.
Yeah, you can do that tonight.
It's better. Last year, our awards went out in like mid-January.
Yeah,
it was too late.
Odd.
People are already in the new year, and they're thinking about, they're excited about the new games coming out. They don't really care about the last
year. It was, last year was definitely, like I remember, it was like we were talking about earlier. I think I saw a tweet you wrote about it. You can put it up on the screen if you want. But it was like last year, you know, it was pretty much like, certain that it was going to be Portal 2, right?
There's nothing like that this year. That's just like, obviously.
Game of the year. Yeah.
Like last year, it was like Skyrim or Portal 2. Right. And then there was people like me who was like, Rayman. And like somebody else was like, what about this? And everybody was like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, Uncharted and Zelda.
Yeah, and Zelda. Yeah, and everybody, you know, you were like, it's really great. And I played it. And then everyone was like, a couple people were like, Zelda, you got to really. And we all played that. I played it for 40 hours and was like, nope. But this is it's a really different year. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, it feels much more wide open.
Yeah.
Welcome back to GameScoop. Remember, viewers, you can win a $250 Best Buy gift card on Friday. Stay tuned to figure out exactly how you can win it. We still have yet to pick the winner from last week, too.
Oh my gosh.
So that's coming.
It's hard to believe we haven't come up with a winner there. Like, you know, if we can elect a president and make it so easy. I mean, that election yesterday, I tell
you. Topical.
It was crazy. And now we know, of course.
That candidate we that won the election.
Oh my gosh.
Serious business.
Hopefully.
Now. Serious business.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That iPad mini is out.
It is. I've heard of it.
It's been selling. Apparently, it's been selling well. Apple said they sold 3 million iPads over the weekend.
Yeah, they announced the first 3 days, 3 million iPads have been sold, but they didn't break out how many of those were the
minis or the
iPad were the fourth 4. Gen big iPad or the mini. Right.
But the iPad mini is out, and I've been hearing good things about it.
Yeah.
I'm not sensing, like, for an Apple launch of a new product, you know, excitement isn't as high as it sometimes is for like the iPhone 5, but you know, it's apparently doing well.
Yeah.
Also out now is the Microsoft Surface tablet. This has been out for a few weeks, couple weeks. I'm sensing a lot less excitement over this device.
That certainly seems to be the case. I do like the Surface commercial though, with the clicking and the dancing.
I think the hardware itself is a cool looking piece of hardware, and I like the OS and stuff, but again, I am so ingrained in Apple's ecosystem of apps and everything that you would have a hard time, even if you offered me a better experience, like with the OS and a better experience with the hardware that I would want to leave.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big problem, right? Like, I, you know, get accused of being an Apple fanboy because I have an iPhone and an iPad. I have nothing against Android. You know, I have an Android tablet that I, you know, play some games on for IGN, and I wouldn't be opposed to an Android phone. But you're absolutely right, Anthony, is it's all about the apps. You know, you'd lose them all. I have, you know, dozens and dozens or hundreds of games that I like to play. And more coming to Android. There's not this giant gap between stuff that's on Android.
Yeah, I mean, even if I had an Android phone, I would buy an iPod Touch so that I could keep playing iOS games.
Yeah, I mean, and so the Surface, like, the Windows Store is coming along, but there's not really that many games on it yet, not that many apps on it yet. Like, the hardware could be amazing where it's not really that amazing, but it could be, and they would still have trouble getting people on board.
Yeah, it could be amazing at $100, and I still don't know that I would want one because, again, the App Store.
But now we're hearing more about an Xbox Surface tablet.
Yeah.
That's specifically meant for gaming and smaller around the iPad mini size, say 7 inches.
I mean, that could be really hot depending on how, you know, they, software sells hardware, right? So if they can get the guys that make Mark of the Ninja, get Chair with Shadow Complex, you know, get these games, you know, really built with touch controls in mind or have some controller that comes with the device, something like that could be really cool, but without the software, you know, what does it really mean to be a gaming tablet?
Yeah, I mean, if it has the Surface tablet has a USB port in it anyways, yeah. So and then if you could just hook up an Xbox controller, which would make sense, yeah, that'd be a fine control implement, but it would need to be that games that are being developed for Xbox Live have a new standard where they have to be portable to the tablet. Like, so the library of XBLA games could also be applied to this tablet. That would be interesting to me.
I mean, that's definitely exciting. When we think about the future of handheld games, you know, it's not really the Vita, Greg Miller.
Yeah, I know. I think everybody knows that. Sales have shown that.
I thought I was just like thumbing you in the eye, and no. Then you don't even...
That's like the you being an Apple fanboy, PlayStation fanboy. I don't give a fuck.
Brian Altano just
5.0,
bought
5.0, Little Big Planet carding. Yeah, Brian Altano just bought a Vita. It's, you know, the days of... Damon's been saying it for years. The days of people there with a dedicated handheld are dying.
Yeah,
like I think the Vita is a great system. It has great games, but it doesn't have enough stellar hit after hit to make people go, "Holy crap! I have to own this thing."
Yeah, you need this
even
cycle.
The 3DS.
You need the cycle of you have good games, so then people buy your hardware, and then because there's more people out there, that's more attractive to game developers, and it's hard to sort of get that going in the face of the overwhelming success of the App
$99,
Store.
$99. I'm a developer on the App Store, and I get to make and learn and get everything going.
An Xbox Surface tablet. So first of all, does the name Xbox even make sense for a tablet?
I mean, if they're trying to sell it to gamers.
I mean, it's kind of hard to say. Like, it's tough to know what that means. Does that mean it runs some sort of Xbox operating system? You know, their other tablets are on Windows. You know, the current Surface out now is on Windows RT, and then they have a full, you know, a more high-end Surface coming out that runs sort of the full version of Windows Mobile. And so it's not really clear to me what Xbox tablet means.
We were just talking about how the time of dedicated handheld gaming platforms is waning, and so what, Microsoft is now going to make a dedicated gaming tablet? That doesn't make sense to me.
That's what I'm reading through here to check on. Could this just be a Surface that quote, will likely include custom ARM processor and high bandwidth RAM?
The thing is, though, is that they'd be shooting themselves in the foot if they're going to specifically develop games for one type of Surface and not for all Surfaces. It needs to be for all or none.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, Xbox is just a brand, right? It's just a name, and so it signifies to people video games. Like, that's, and I think that's fair enough. You know, that's a cool idea, that's a good idea if they're going to put some really powerful chip in it so that it runs, you know, games like Horn, you know, really well.
As long as it's doing other stuff.
I'm just saying, this shortly out of the gate, you don't want to diversify your audience where the developers have to be like, well, if you have this one, you can't do it. Like, Apple's done that over many, many years, but you can't do it, like, right.
That's actually a problem. That's part of the secret of Apple's success is that, you know, they really only have a couple products. You know, they have iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, and so it's easy to get your product running on all of them. And even if you have a really high-end game, there is a cutoff point. Like, if you have a 3GS or even an iPhone 4 at this point, like, you're going to have trouble running some of the brand-new high-end games. But for the most part, everything just sort of runs out of the box, and that's already a problem on Android. If you have an Android tablet or phone, it's really hard to know whether it runs on your device. It's all fragmented and complicated, and so that's absolutely something that Microsoft wants to avoid, or will need to avoid if they want to succeed.
I would have a problem with the name because it's not a box. The Xbox console is at least a box. That makes sense to me. The tablet, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. Like, if they're like, this game only runs on the Xbox tablet, like Anthony said.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's you're going to see, like, all three games for it.
But,
yeah.
Like, Xbox is Microsoft's only cool brand. So I could see the, like, allure of them.
Sure, it's just to me that they should have never called it Surface. They should have just called them Xbox tablets or something from the start.
But Xbox is so closely associated with gaming for most people, you know? They've been trying to make the Xbox 360 more of a, like, entertainment hub. You know, if you look at the menu, you know, gaming only has a small corner of the, you know, your home screen there. But I still think the Xbox name still means gaming to people.
Sure, I mean, but they are actively trying to change that. You know, Xbox Music is their Zune music service rebranded.
Yeah.
You know, rebranded and renamed, you know, and put under a label that's been more successful and popular for them.
So I wonder if this is just Microsoft saying, hey, Xbox is our biggest brand.
Just call it Xbox.
Just throw everything
just behind it. Everything's
Xbox.
Xbox.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Xbox
is.
Word. Xbox Excel. Xbox Paperclip.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, God.
Remember him?
Yeah. I mean, it's a cool idea, you know, a tablet, a really powerful tablet that can do some stuff. And then also, you know, again, I don't know if it'll come with a controller or what, but something
there would need to be some sort of controller solution for it.
Yeah, something that's built for gamers. I mean, that would excite me personally.
I'll say it right now, this thing's dead out of the gate.
Switching gears, are we done with that one?
Was that you switching gears?
Yeah.
I got it.
Putting it in the granny lock.
You guys ever heard of this developer of video games named Capcom?
Yeah. Makers of such hits as...
Big Man.
Dr. Wily. Capcom has announced a plan to hire 1,000 new developers over the next 10 years.
Hopefully all everywhere but Japan.
Oh.
No, so they want to do it all in Japan. With the idea being to start...
a lot of people.
Capcom hiring 1,000 new developers, importing all of them over 10 years.
The idea being to go back to making more games internally. Over the past few years, Capcom has been outsourcing a lot of games. See Bionic Commando, Dark Void, and the forthcoming Lost Planet 3. That game's not out yet, right?
No.
Yeah, but the studios...
People have stopped. Nobody's talking about that game.
They've also been putting them to studios that have such awesome histories, such as... what was it? The Box. What was that game called? Like, that's Spark Unlimited.
Oh, yeah. Those are the guys doing Lost Planet 3.
Yeah, and it's like, so maybe you should think about the teams that you're picking a little bit more, because you're not...
It's a Gamecock game.
I'm lost. I don't know what's happening.
It was called
Legendary the Box.
Yeah.
I'm just saying...
Can we all just take a moment to remember there was a company called Gamecock, and somebody thought that was a good idea?
Yep.
Weren't they the ones who did the funeral parade for E3?
Yes.
And then they died?
Yeah. I don't think that, I just feel like that if anything, Japanese developers, I don't mean to sound like all Japanese developers are bad, they're not, but I just feel like over the last decade, they've done a lot of bad stuff that has not innovated, and so we've even seen companies in Japan be like, we need to get some American producers and stuff in here to help us learn how to make better games.
Yeah,
but this is what Capcom tried, right? And other Japanese developers like Square Enix has tried this too, bring in more Western development with stuff like Sleeping Dogs.
Yeah.
And Konami tried that stuff with Castlevania.
That's what I was going to say, like Castlevania was great, and you know, Sleeping Dogs was very good, and they bought Eidos, and like that's worked out. That was a brand that was almost dead, and now like, you know, them and Crystal Dynamics are coming on strong. So you just got to pick the right team. Like, I feel like Capcom took this view of, oh, the Japanese games industry is kind of in trouble, but the Western games industry is doing so good, so let's just hire some Western studios to make games. I'm like, you can't just pick them. They're not good because of where they're from.
Yeah, but I'm curious if, like, these Western studios had final creative control, or if it still came down to some higher-ups in Japan who were like, this is the game we want, and in which case it's like...
I mean, there's that point, and then you also have to still pick the right team for the right job and pick talented people. I mean,
which those teams are getting smaller and smaller, because companies like even like Spark and stuff like that, like, I can't see these companies continuing to do console development. All these little publishers that are not owned, I mean, all these developers that are not owned by a publisher, they're going to have a hard time, like, continuing to develop console games. They're going to go the way of Nihilistic and everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really understand. Mobile. So this move from Capcom is a pushback against, okay, so we outsourced a bunch of our games that didn't go very well, so now we're going to hire 1,000 developers and do it all internally again. And I'm like, you know, fair enough, I guess. That'll give you the control and this and that. But it's like, so basically you're going to have 1,000 new people that have never worked together working on it. Just the whole story seems kind of weird and strange to me.
Here's a question, Damon. Is this all an example of what's happening in Japan? You go to TGS, and your report back is that nobody's doing console games over there. That Japan has totally gone off in this mobile way. So you don't see... we keep saying that, okay, Japanese games, there's no new ideas, this, that, and the other. They're not appealing to us anymore. Is it because there's old Japanese companies like Capcom here trying to stay relevant when in their country the games they're trying to make relevant to us are no longer relevant to them, so they have no anchor, no horse in the race, if you will, to know what's happening?
Yeah, so it's like the Japanese market today is very different from the Western market.
Exactly. You know? And so since you're over there in the heart of something that's now swirling around, it would be like us trying to cover stuff in Japan, right? When we're like not having boots on the ground kind of thing, where we're sort of relying on hazy reports, trying to figure out what people want. Like, well, you know, people really like stuff that's coming from Japan. Let's get some, you know, blah, 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 Japanese developers in.
Except I don't know what the answer is, because it seems like Capcom's plan made sense. I mean, yes, like, Western games are performing very well. Let's get some, you know, let's hire some Western talent to make some games for us and to appeal to a wider audience. But it didn't work out for them.
It does say that in this they're going to be training more people to create games in our mobile content and PC game sectors. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, I mean, it could be that a lot of these people are going to be making the next Resident Evil iPhone game, so...
yeah, to be fair, Capcom does do a lot of stuff on mobile. It's not like they're just doubling down on consoles. They were one of the first companies to do mobile and are still big in that space. But, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. they've been a company that's managed to kind of do both and have success in both over the last few years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess I was just criticizing them a second ago, but now that I think about it longer, I mean, Damon, you're kind of right. I mean, you know, what other option do they have? Like, what choice do they have?
Maybe they just made the wrong decisions, you know, like they brought in Grin, right, to make Bionic Commando.
Yeah.
I mean, that game did not turn out well.
No.
When people look back at this generation, they're not going to think, oh, the Bionic Commando reboot, you know.
It's just, but the XBLA one,
remember
so
that
good.
One. Yeah, so there's like, that was Capcom 2, you know. But then Bionic Commando Rearm 2 was bad. Yeah.
You know, you can jump!
Maybe Capcom just needs to try making some new IPs, like really new IPs. Well, Lost Planet was a new IP, and it was great.
They have tried that. Dragon's Dogma just came out this year, and that was actually pretty well received, and people liked that one well enough.
They did what was the big bonkers one that was in space and you had the fist?
Bonkers in space.
Asura's Wrath.
Yeah. Damon knew what I was. Yeah. We were on the
same. Maybe Capcom should start trying to do more boutique games for download instead of console
releases. Boutique games for interesting people?
Yeah, boutique games for interesting people rather than downloads. I don't know, those Japanese, a lot of the games that come out of Japan often are like really bonkers and crazy in like a cool way, but they go for these $60 console releases where they're just never going to succeed, and it's like, dial some of that back and make something really interesting, bizarre, and make it a $15 downloadable experience. Maybe it'll take off. Like, maybe they should not go for the big bets and go for a bunch of smaller bets.
They still, like, their fighting games are still very popular.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the backbone of the company. Very well received, both critically and commercially. Right?
Sure, as long as they don't just start crapping them out every year, which they've been doing again.
They already do that.
But I'm saying, like, Super Street Fighter Turbo X4 is just like, quit making your previous one so irrelevant, and they keep doing it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you should say, stop buying them.
Yeah, that's true, too. Along with Dynasty Warriors. Stop that, too.
I mean, it's hard, like, we were talking about, like, you can easily, you know, this story today is about Capcom, but the bulk of this conversation could have also been about Konami. It could have also been about Square Enix. Like, we were at the Konami Gamers Day, and it was, you know, Metal Gear Solid and Zone of Enders, and, like, you know, it's all the same stuff. You know, they just need, I agree, they need some new IP. The next generation can't come fast enough for them.
Capcom still says... they have a goal. They still think they can sell 6 million copies of Resident Evil 6. I'm not sure where they're at now. I'm sure it has sold pretty well.
That seems very plausible to me.
I hope it's like a fundraiser where they have a giant thermometer out in front of the building, and every day they go out there and like notch it up a little bit higher. You're painting it red.
Get this library.
Capcom says we are confident because of the approaching overseas Christmas and New Year selling season. Past sales.
Happy New Year's.
So three reasons why they're confident. Because of the approaching overseas Christmas and New Year selling season.
Of course.
Past sales of titles in this series. Yep. And for other reasons.
That's their official response.
I read tea leaves. It's okay, it would be so.
It's going to be okay. We're going to come out of this one.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hi, listeners.
Hi, listeners. Listeners, remember you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com, just like Cody did. Cody writes in to say...
Cody!
Cody has a good question.
Does he?
It's kind of a big, kind of a serious question. So before we get into that, let me remind you that we have a $250 Best Buy gift card to give away at the end of this show. Stay tuned for that. I wanted to get that out of the way because this question is so serious.
Let me get something out of the way as well.
What, Greg?
I accidentally took two of your questions in my Up at Noon script, so they're over there too if you want more questions. I'll be quiet.
Oh, that's okay. Did you talk about them on the show?
No, they didn't make the cut of the Up at Noon news you care about.
Just in case you need more.
Cody asks, what is the game that defines this generation? Oh, Assassin's Creed, Call of Duty, Uncharted, Gears of War.
This generation.
Thanks.
Well, DC Universe Online, of course. Free to play. Stick with me. Free to play. It's online. Oh, the kids were all about.
You have
this
Stockholm
game.
Syndrome for that game.
I don't have nothing.
Let me offer a possibility.
Okay.
Is there any game bigger than Call of Duty this generation? Any franchise bigger than Call of Duty?
No, but I mean, how are we defining what defines this generation? Is
exactly.
It just sales? Because if it sells, then yes, Call of Duty wins, right?
Mind share with the public.
Well, there's that. And then it also takes advantage of current gen technology, Xbox Live. Like,
right,
that really
right.
wasn't possible before.
See, I think I stray differently here. I think a game like Minecraft,
I was gonna say Minecraft
defines
too,
this generation
yeah.
because it's like created by a small team of nobodies, suddenly unleashed upon the public who don't know what it is. It doesn't look better than anything else out there. It's small, it's, you know, and then. Suddenly, it's this worldwide phenomenon. We don't even know how to cover it because it's so big, and there's people all over the world are contributing to it, and they didn't even know it was a thing 6 months ago. And it's yeah. new. It's not even a sequel. It's not like we're putting this out every year. There's no map packs or anything like that. They're just like, here's this big building block set that anyone can enjoy of any age. Here it is. It's only possible now. Like, I don't think this is something that we would have had during the PS2 era or something like that. It just wouldn't have functioned the same way.
Yeah. Another good one to use sort of Greg's idea of something that's like a current trend, not free to play, but I would say The Walking Dead. Like most episodic games aren't up to the sort of standard and quality of The Walking Dead.
Sure,
and
sure.
Most people don't make games in the way that The Walking Dead was created intentionally to be episodic. They typically just ship a product as whole and it's just broken into chapters. I imagine, you know, next generation, and as generations go on, we're just going to see more and more episodic content. Hopefully, it's as good as The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But The Walking Dead might be too niche. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that it the generation. You
but
think.
I mean, like, I think you could make a case for Angry Birds.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that too.
The 99
yeah.
cent.
Yeah.
Is a fucking endless money pile for anyone who wants to reach in or.
Let's take a step back. So
you take a step back.
No,
I'm going two steps forward. David, I'm in the future.
Like, think about it like this: like the games that defined like the 80s were like Space Invaders, Pac-Man, and. So, like, what?
I actually thought about this. Maybe it would help if we go back in time.
Oh,
okay.
It's like, man. See, that's what I'm talking about, Mr. Takes Two Steps
Too
Far
in the Future.
Let
me tell you what defines the next box.
The game that defined the PlayStation 2 generation would be Grand Theft Auto 3.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then going back the PlayStation, the 64-bit era, I thought maybe Final Fantasy 7?
Mario 64.
Mario 64, hands down.
Really?
Yes.
See, I was thinking that Mario Kart, the original Mario Kart, would define the 16-bit generation.
Oh, the 16-bit?
Yeah.
Well, no, we're jumping generations here.
Yeah,
64.
I'm lost in time!
we're just talking about... So PlayStation, Nintendo 64.
So to me, it was like Nintendo put out the N64 with Mario on day one, and it was just like, here's how you do a 3D game.
That's true.
And they dropped the mic. Exactly. And no one got it right until GTA 3.
That's right. Kind of true. Wanted to say like PlayStation, I would say Final Fantasy 7. So, yeah. And for Xbox, obviously, and for that last generation, it's either GTA 3 or Halo.
But I really do think now, like something like Angry Birds and The Walking Dead, what they both share in common is that back in the 80s, you were like, hey, here's this game, it's called Space Invaders. And you're like, I don't really like it. And that was it for you. You were done with it forever. But here, it's like, we're up to Walking Dead episode 4. It's amazing. You need to catch up now. People are like, okay, and I have to get in. We got to try. They just added 80 new levels to Angry Birds Space. Like, you know, it's this piecemeal.
Well, Angry Birds Star Wars.
And yeah, exactly. And it's this sort of piecemeal content of if you miss it the first time, you don't feel like you missed out on anything. You could go back, jump in at any time.
Yeah.
The entry fee is super low. You know, like even with Minecraft, they're like, hey, we added a Yeti or
something.
And
that's why
I was
thinking,
I'm back.
I think there's a case for Angry Birds. I think there's still a case for WoW. I mean, how different is WoW from when it first launched? And it's something that continues to iterate and continues to be a juggernaut.
Right. On the flip side, I do really think that there's something to be said. You mentioned Uncharted 3. Something like a game like that where you can sit down and it's a sort of cinematic, almost controlled experience from start to finish in 8 or 9, 10 hours. And it's just like this monumental blockbuster that's only possible with the technology we have now.
And see, what's interesting is, like, it's so easy, I think, to go back, like, to get into take the three steps back, to do the other generations and define, because we get to see what the future generations took away from that, right? That's the thing. When we get to when we're ending the next console life cycle, we look back at last generation and say, maybe it's Heavy Rain, maybe that kind of choice is what people take into the next, you know, era or whatever.
Heavy Rain is going to be the game.
Call of Duties, like doing this half circle stick to shoot.
It's weird with stuff like Minecraft and Warcraft, though, because PC, like, in our heads, do we define PC generations by console generations? You know, like,
well, if
PC,
you're talking console kind of generation, that's one thing. I mean, if you're talking about the generation of, or the decade, the generation of gamers, like what games they're playing. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, but see, here's the thing, though. We're at the end of a console generation now, and so many of the games that we've been playing recently, especially in the last year or two, are PC games. I mean,
exactly. Just a giant renaissance. The argument sort of moot, too, especially when you're going with, you're saying Call of Duty or something like that, and then you're saying, you know, the
which
differentiation
is on PC as well.
Of PC. Yeah, but Minecraft overtook Call of Duty as, you know, activity on Xbox Live, and that's huge. That was a nerdy PC game where you sit there, you break blocks, and the first hour I spent playing with it, I dug a hole until I was in hell, and I was like, get me out of here. And my friend Anthony Gallegos, the PC editor, had to be like, he's like, all right, I'll build a stairwell to get you up. I don't know what the hell I was doing. But kids love that game, and they're playing it like crazy, and they're playing it more than Call of Duty. So, and it looks like crap. Like, it doesn't look like this gritty,
you know, it's
not like crap, but it doesn't look like Uncharted.
Sure, but I mean, it looks like it looks like an N64 game with you know, less fog.
And, you know, to your point about if we're talking about platform, I mean, it is on 360.
So. Guy gets so mad.
I think what
you're like.
I would say
I thought that was funny.
I would say we probably
with less. And then you said fog funny with an accent.
Fog.
You're far away. You're from far away.
I think we'd be probably closer to figuring out the game of this generation with Minecraft and Angry Birds than we would with Call of Duty, frankly, which is crazy.
And what does that say, right?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
I mean, these like billion-dollar companies are making these cinematic experiences, and in Call of Duty, they've literally rendered every single possible item on Earth and dumped it on a field, and you have to run around it and hide behind it and shoot people.
Right.
It's, you know, $60, and there's next-gen graphics, and there's millions of people playing online, and then it's just like, or here's a dollar iPhone game where you flick a bird into a wall.
Well, think about this, though, to, you know, Cody asking this question.
Cody!
Think of all the people who were converted to gaming via iPhone in this generation. That, you know, that people who were just, you know, buying a phone that wouldn't necessarily be playing games, that they weren't going to buy a 3DS, they weren't going to buy a Vita, whatever it is. But now they all speak this vocabulary, and Angry Birds is definitely within that. I mean, so many people play those games that wouldn't even know what maybe Call of Duty or even Minecraft might be.
So in that case, I guess the game of the generation is sort of like the gateway drug for non-gamers to get into other games, but that gamers are also enjoying as well. Like something
so
like
definitely Heavy Rain. Then.
Yes, definitely Heavy Rain. Everyone
loves
that.
That.
Yeah. No, I mean that would be that would include something like Tetris. Remember when everyone on Earth was playing Tetris? You'd go on a plane and there'd be like a businessman.
Right. No,
like,
you're right.
I never
Absolutely.
Even thought
businessman.
You would play a businessman. Tetris.
No, but Angry Birds is the Tetris or Pac-Man of this generation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's a very very good question. Yeah. One we probably can't answer in the brief time we have today. But good question, Cody. This is Brandon, and how do you think his last name is pronounced?
This is Brandon Calvillo.
That's right. Hey guys, big fan of the show. Since the PS3 and Xbox 360 are now 7-year-old consoles, and the PS4 and Xbox 720 are seemingly on the horizon, I personally think 2013 is shaping up to be the greatest year for the current generation of consoles, like a swan song, if you will. With heavy hitters like BioShock Infinite, God of War Ascension, GTA 5 coming out next year, it seems as if are trying to send these consoles out on a very high note. Do you think that 2013 is going to be the best year for this generation of consoles?
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be 2012, but half the games got delayed to 2013.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. He left Tomb Raider off the list. He left Last of Us off the list.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty typical that you see some of the most amazing games of a generation coming out at the very tail end of it.
God of War 2 came to PS2 when PS3 was already on the market. So
Resident Evil 4
Vector
was
Man
the last
came
year.
To Sega Genesis.
How can we forget?
Conker's Bad Fur Day on the N64.
Yeah. That's right.
Ghost House just sold nonstop during the Sega Master System era, so it didn't matter when it came out.
Ghost House was one of the cards, wasn't it?
Oh. Thank you.
God.
Yeah, at this point, the developers know the platforms very well. They know how to make games for it. They know all the tricks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, so now part of the question though is, will this be the best year? Now, what would we like up to before 2013? What would we say is like the best year of gaming in this generation?
This
like 2007. When BioShock came out, the orange box with Portal.
Yeah,
what else came out?
I thought the best year is always the year we just had.
2007 was Uncharted as well.
First Day in Vegas came out that year too. It's awesome.
Yeah. So let's do the math. 2013, we're gonna have Tomb Raider, which looks incredible. Last of Us, BioShock, Dead Space 3, GTA 5.
I'm gonna throw this out there. Call me. It's not one of my joke answers either. It's a real answer. Hopefully, no announcements, nobody knows anything. I would hope Walking Dead Season 2, right? Would be sometime in 2013.
Yeah.
And you would hope that they have learned so much that it runs better than the first season did. And all
There's no way that they're going to end with the momentum that they have and then not do something next year.
I don't know what their production cycle is. I know they announced Fables at the same time they did the original Walking Dead, and not like where we are now.
Plus, I mean, we haven't heard anything from Respawn. So, there's probably going to be a new shooter on the market. We haven't heard really any details other than that stuff from that lawsuit about Bungie's new game.
Find out. Destiny. Hear more about that on Up at Noon Monday.
Right, but still.
Not a whole lot, but you'll hear some.
Bungie's on the show. They're not talking about their game.
So, 2013 could conceivably shape up to, an incredible year considering all the great games that we already know about that are coming out. But who knows about the launch titles for the new Xbox and the new PlayStation. I mean, that right there alone could be something incredible as well. Infamous 3, what?
God, I hope so.
Launch lineups generally aren't that mind-blowing, but...
No. True. PlayStation Vita's was, and it didn't help at all, so there you go.
I was just looking over the Wii U launch lineup and thinking the exact same thing. I was like, I pre-ordered one of these, this is going to be great. And I went through the list of what I'm actually going to be playing, and it was like two or three games. And I was I'll check out Nintendo Land for a little while. That'll be a novelty. I'll dump 30 or 40 hours in a new Super Mario Brothers, and I'll collect everything. And then I'll look down and I'll go, do I want to play Batman again?
No.
No? Rayman was delayed until next year. Like, do I want to play Assassin's Creed 3 weeks
later? Zombie U. You got to worry. Do you want to play Zombie U?
You don't even want to play Assassin's Creed 3 now.
I played a little bit. I'm playing the one on Vita.
So do you like it more? Maybe the launch titles aren't going to be. I mean, who knows what the launch titles would be like? But it's just going to add to whatever awesomeness 2013 already is. Plus, just new consoles are just
it's very exciting.
It's exciting.
Oh my god, I can store photos on it.
By the way, why is Sony refusing to talk about the most important aspect of the PlayStation 4? Is it going to have printer settings?
I hope. You can only hope it'll have some printer settings in there.
Have you ever printed anything
on
your PS4?
No. I've tried to do it on our office network. It just doesn't even find the thing.
This is Miguel Alonso.
Oh, good name.
He says, hey guys, I haven't been watching GameScoop for very long, since it only recently came out on YouTube. But you all seem to know so much about games and stuff. So I was wondering, what kind of games would you recommend for a gamer who's into fighter games, but needs a story to go through as well? I enjoyed Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm Generations, Super Smash Bros. Brawl Melee, Mortal Kombat vs. DC Universe.
Right. The regular Mortal Kombat reboot that came out, last year?
Yeah.
Has a ridiculously fun story in it.
Yeah.
It's completely absurd. Like, Johnny Cage doesn't know he's fighting in a tournament in hell until a third of the way through the game. He's like, man, look at that CG.
Look at
those backup actors. And all of a sudden, sees a guy get his spine ripped out for real. And he's like, holy shit, this is real. I'm in hell. So play that. That's fun.
Similar thing, but Injustice Gods Among Us is coming out next year.
And it's
got a DC.
Yet, but I was going to ask, what about All-Stars?
Yeah, is there a story in that?
You want a story in it? I mean, every character has a single-player campaign that you play through, but it's, It's not like a super. It's a very tongue-in-cheek story of they kind of just know that they're. No, it doesn't have a good story. It has a story. It's not like an actual.
I mean, the best writers on earth couldn't figure out a logical way to get all those characters.
Why is Sackboy fighting the BioShock?
I'm really mad at that onion cat
thing. I'm really mad at that onion cat.
Typically, most fighting games aren't put together or known for their great stories. So
that's true.
The Soul Calibur games have really crazy stories.
I was going to mention that.
If you want to pick up something that's inexpensive, you could get,
Well, they do, but they do some crazy things. Like they wrote, Ezio into one of them? Link is in one and Darth Vader. And they actually find logical ways to weave that into the story. Like, the Animus broke. Really?
Yes. Soul Calibur 4 had Darth Vader and Yoda in it. Yeah. So if you're into Star Wars, that's a little extra fiction. Plus, and it had The Apprentice as well for something.
Of course, WWE 13.
Whoa. Wait a second. There you go. That's a great idea. Yeah.
Okay. This is John.
boring name.
He says,
"Where's Cody? Cody!"
I was wondering if you could define some terms that you guys use regularly. I haven't been into following video game news for very long. It would be helpful. What are third-party developers, first-party developers, and AAA games?
First-party developers are internally owned by companies like Nintendo.
Yeah, the publisher owned.
By publisher owned, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if we use this, the term second party ever.
We do.
That would be like who? That's like
yeah,
retro.
I don't think we ever use second party developers. I've asked about that before, but nobody ever uses that term. There's just first and third party, right?
Colin uses it once in a while. I believe what it is, it's defined as it would be a third party developer that's been contracted or paid to only make games for that time. So like Quantic Dream is like a second party to Sony, because Sony doesn't own Quantic Dream, but Quantic Dream is only making games for Sony platforms.
Sure.
Or Insomniac.
For a while,
but they were.
Yeah.
Right.
And now everyone hates them because they're not.
There are only three first-party developers, right? I'm trying to make this as simple as possible.
There's three first-party publishers, and then there's developers that they own.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Like, Sony owns Naughty Dog, so they're a first-party developer.
So Microsoft owns and publishes content on Xbox, but they also own the Microsoft Game Studio, and that would be the developer.
I don't think we're clearing it up for John at all.
So what's what's Rare?
Rare is first party.
They're first party because they're owned. Microsoft. And what's Retro? Are they also first party? Are they owned by Nintendo? Or are they second
Retro's
party?
I
Nintendo.
Work for the PlayStation team. But like Visceral Games makes Dead Space. They're a third party developer.
Yeah.
They have no, think of it this way. Who swears allegiance to whom?
Mm-hmm.
If Visceral swears allegiance to nobody, they make games for everybody. Rockstar makes games for everybody.
EA makes games for everybody.
If you're making a game for a cross-platform game, you're not a first party developer.
Yep.
That's a good way to think about it.
Triple A game.
It's the blockbuster movie of video games.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed, millions of dollars going into it.
Assassin's giant budgets, giant teams. You know, there's a big distinction between, you know, Halo or Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed. They have 350, 400 people working on them, giant, you know, tens, 30s, $50 billion budgets versus smaller indie games you hear us talk about, like Hotline Miami or even Journey. Like that game company is, you know, a relatively small studio compared to, you know, the companies that are making, you know, the Call of Duty.
And it's worth mentioning that AAA games don't always get AAA scores.
Oh, sure.
Not really worth mentioning.
I mentioned
he's not stupid.
Well, he might be.
He didn't know that guy with the name like
that? We had to explain a lot of things to him that we didn't really know the answers to ourselves, so.
We nailed it.
It's true.
I nailed it.
Nailed it.
You kind of shit the bed over.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa. Right. One more email.
Hopefully
this
one's about, hey, explain cigarettes to me, and you'll be like, well.
I haven't had one in
like
6 months.
You got a filter and you go in.
That would be bad. That's not how cigarettes.
Is that how you make cigarettes?
You don't make cigarettes.
Some people do.
Okay, some people.
Somebody has to make the cigarettes.
Philip Morris has to make the cigarettes.
You can make your own. They make the papers.
You can roll your own.
Yeah.
You can't make your own. Like you'd have to own like a whole tobacco farm for that. It's a lot of work.
So you're saying if there's a rolled cigarette on the table and I go, "Who made that?" You're gonna be like, "Nobody." I rolled it.
Like, well, there's a bunch of different companies involved in that. A company made the rolling papers, a lighter, someone your mother made you.
You know, Greg, I was going to answer this gentleman's question, but I think he's starting to double dip here. With even like another site.
What?
Yeah, he's starting to double dip with another site.
No, this is a good one to call out. That's awesome. I've never seen that before. Tony Cooper wrote into gamescoop@ign.com, just like you can, listener. But he also wrote into letters at eatsleepgame.com. Oh, I thought it was a developer. Now that I see it's another site,
I don't even know what that
Sorry,
is.
Sorry, Tony
Eat Sleep
Cooper.
Game is...
No, I screwed it.
Not Jaffe. No, that's Eat Sleep Play.
It's Arthur Geese over
at
Rebel FM.
It's Rebel FM. Oh, my he's trying to get on Rebel FM in this.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll have more luck with Rebel FM.
Yeah, maybe they'll read your shit over there.
Yeah. Love you, Arthur. Ace will do anything for a dollar. Just send it to him.
You may remember last week we gave you the opportunity to win a $250 Best Buy gift card. All you had to do was send in your best cat gift. We got many good ones.
Oh, my God.
Which I'll show you a bunch of the best ones at the end of the show. The best one, though, came from Chris...
Le Vasseur.
He sent in this one.
Right.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
It's really
the one you emailed out, right?
No, I couldn't. That one's not safe for games.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I was like, that one is awesome.
That one, Casey, has a bear lady ass in that one. So it's probably
it's not an entire bear ass.
I mean, show it. It's just not really probably appropriate. Anyway, Chris, congratulations.
NSNGS.
I will email you the code for your Best Buy gift card. We have another one to give away. The way you win it is a little bit different this week, and Naomi is going to explain exactly how you do it.
Thanks, Damon. So here's how you can win the $250 gift card to Best Buy. We want to see the very best video game GIF you can find. Send it to us at gamescoop@ign.com. We'll pick one winner and notify them by email and then feature it here on the show. This giveaway is powered by Best Buy, where you can pre-order Call of Duty Black Ops 2 and can play it first at select stores. Good luck, everyone. Now back to you, Damon.
Thank you, Naomi. Next week is Grand Theft Auto 5 week, isn't it, Casey?
That's right, yeah. So starting on Monday, we're going to have a plethora of information about GTA 5. We are going to be on GameScoop talking about it. We've got stories galore, talking about the missions, talking about the characters, talking about pretty much everything. So,
yep. Just to make sure we don't jinx it, I think we should all wear the same clothes.
I think you're right.
Okay.
That's
okay,
a good idea.
I can definitely plan to do that.
Monday morning, we're all going to be looking like this.
Okay.
Perfect. Leave all these things right here.
It's true.
Hold on. Now I'm ready.
Thank you for tuning in. Remember, you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com. Everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.